The Indonesian military's brutality in Aceh traced to the authoritarian New Order government of Indonesian President Mohamed Suharto, a former general who took power during the 1960s after a violent purge of the Indonesian Communist Party. The United States saw Suharto as a vital link in its anti-communist strategy in Southeast Asia. Indonesia was an unwieldy archipelago of about 17,000 islands spread out over 3,000 square miles. Suharto consolidated his power by allowing the Indonesian military to enrich itself during deployments around the country's resource-rich islands. He also constructed a tight-knit circle of family and ethnic Chinese business cronies in the capital of Jakarta. To shore up his alliance with Washington, the president allowed American corporations to enjoy access to Indonesia's minerals, oil, and gas. Suharto offered mining concessions to Freeport-McMoRan Copper and Gold, and he delivered to Mobil the large stake in Aceh's Arun field. Mobil offered a share of the field to Exxon at the time, but the latter's upstream executives demurred, to their enduring regret. Mobil entered into a production-sharing contract with Indonesia's PT Pertamina, then a state-owned oil company. Under Indonesian law, Suharto could name certain vital national objects that required military protection. In 1983, the Aceh property was so designated. Thousands of TNI soldiers poured into North Sumatra to protect Mobil from the threats and sporadic attacks carried out by GAM. Suharto had tried and failed to win the war in Aceh by force during the 1990s. He declared the province a special military zone. Torture and disappearances became commonplace. The TNI rounded up thousands of young Achenese men, interred them in camps, and forced them to sing the national anthem as part of their re-education. According to human rights investigators, army officers dug in and set up schemes to profit from their deployments to Aceh. They ran logging operations, marijuana farms, and other rackets. Security posts and unmarked interrogation houses became the settings for the blackest chapters in Aceh's conflict during this period. Some of the interrogations took place on Mobil property or very nearby. The TNI units assigned to the gas fields set up security posts along the fenced perimeters. The posts were sometimes separated by just a few hundred yards. Two of the most notorious facilities around Mobil's fields were known as Post A-13 and Rankong Camp. A post might consist of a two-story concrete building or just a barbed wire sandbagged encampment with makeshift sleeping shelters. One area with a particularly heavy security presence lay toward the south of Loksumawe, where pipes gathered gas from scattered wellheads and drew it into trunk lines for transport to the liquefied natural gas plant. A large trunk line ran down a straight, miles-long corridor known as the Pipeline Road. By early 2001, GAM had taken to planting bombs and digging up pipes along the road. The TNI erected security posts at intervals along the Pipeline Road and ran patrols in the area. During the mid-1990s, Indonesian soldiers and intelligence officers arrested a number of GAM leaders, including Sofyan Daoud, at the Loksumawe port as they returned from exile in Malaysia. They were taken to the Mobil facility for interrogation, according to Ifdal Kasim, the chairman of Indonesia's National Human Rights Commission, which collected evidence about the case. There were more than 20 detainees, and they were tortured at that complex, according to Kasim. There was all sorts of torture by the soldiers. Over the years, hundreds of young men arrested in the vicinity of the Mobil gas fields disappeared, according to Achenese separatist activists and independent human rights investigators. Achenese villagers assumed that the missing men had been killed in custody and had probably been buried near TNI's security posts. Only after Suharto's regime cracked and collapsed under pressure from democracy campaigners in May 1998 did it prove possible to investigate past abuses. That summer, human rights researchers turned up by the dozens in Aceh, interviewed villagers around the Mobil gas fields, documented the names of missing young men, and, guided by informants, dug in the ground for evidence. B.N. Marbun, a member of the National Human Rights Commission, estimated that at least 2,000 Achenese torture victims lay buried in secret graves. He and other investigators identified a dozen such locations and found remains in six of them. In one grave, in the village of Bukit Sintang, they dug up at least a dozen bodies. On October 10, 1998, a coalition of 17 Indonesian human rights groups issued a statement alleging that Mobil Oil provided crucial logistic support to the army, including earth-moving equipment that was used to dig mass graves, to bury Aceh's torture victims and missing young men. Businessweek published a cover story 2 months later under the headline, "What Did Mobil Know?" The oil company's executives told the magazine that the answer was, essentially, nothing. Their employees had occasionally loaned the Indonesian Army heavy equipment, such as excavators, during the New Order years, but only for peaceful purposes. The Mobil executives said they believed their equipment had been used to build roads. The human rights allegations had surfaced just as Lee Raymond and Lou Noto entered into their final talks about merging Exxon and Mobil. Noto flew hurriedly to Jakarta. He met with Gelbard's predecessor as U.S. ambassador to Indonesia, J. Stapleton Roy, who expressed concern about the issue. Noto said that Mobil was unaware of any abuses by TNI soldiers guarding its facilities and did not know anything about its bulldozers being used to dig graves. He flew back and appeared with Raymond in New York on December 1st to announce their merger deal. Along the pipeline road and around the gas fields, Indonesian human rights excavators continued to dig for corpses.